Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
good evening to the listeners of the Wise Women Media Radio Show. This is Anita Stewart bringing you another show Friday night. We wanted to thank our sponsors, which are Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, our network, Daughters of Isis, The Hoodooed Blog, Power New Media and Public Relations, Tarot and Stars, and Florida Nature Photos. We also want to encourage people to contribute what you can at wepay.com. The link is on our blog, wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. That's wisewomenmedia, one word, .posteris, P-O-S-T-E-R-O-U-S.com. And every little bit you contribute does help keep us on the air. We wanted to have a healing show tonight, so I've got two fantastic healers that agreed to be on the show. And the first hour, we have Kelly Cipher. And Kelly, you with me?
I am. Here I am, Anita. Hi.
Hi. And what did you think of the music?
I thought it was great.
Yeah, that's Andreas Vollenweider, who I actually discovered. He had already been playing, of course. I didn't discover him literally, but I discovered his music when I was living in Europe. And I've been a fan ever since. He's from Switzerland, actually.
Mm.
He plays an electronic harp, but he does a lot of studio session stuff for other musicians, too. He's really quite
very
amazing.
Very mystical.
Yeah, very, very mystical. And he's played with everybody from, like, Carly Simon to Herbie Hancock to, I mean, very, very new age, but he can hold his own if it's like a jazz session or some other genre of music. So he's really quite amazing. So we haven't talked, you and I, in a long, long, long time, and we happened to reconnect again on Facebook. And how long has it been since you've moved out of the Tampa Bay area now?
It's been 2 years since I moved out of Tampa.
Yeah. And I actually met you when we were looking for a house, and I think your house was up for sale, wasn't that when Leanne and I met? Yeah.
Yes.
And it was a cute little house, like a bungalow in Zephyr Hills, but with quite a lot of property. So it really was quite a bargain for anybody who wanted to buy some real estate. It was a great little bargain because there was quite a lot of land with the property. So kind of tell us about your adventures since that time, because the last time I saw you, you were in the nursing home. Yeah, you were in the medical facility in Brooksville, and
yes.
I had visited you with Leon, and we had brought the dog, and that was, I think, right when we first got Pierre, so it was probably, yeah, that was about 3 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, that would have been 3 years ago, yes. Well, as you know, I was quite busted up in the accident, and I developed the infection in my leg. In October of 2011, I made the choice to let the doctors amputate my right foot, and that's actually when my healing, believe it or not, began, because I finally cut off what I deemed my enemy, because I wasn't healing, and I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker. I was still in a wheelchair. I couldn't walk. I remember when I woke up from that surgery, I felt empowered, even though I didn't expect to feel that way. And I knew I was going to get better, and I knew I was going to accomplish my goals. I really mm-hmm. leaned on my family. Many people of many different faiths and spirituality beliefs were praying for me and sending me many healing vibes. I decided that I was just going to meet this confrontation head on and give it everything I had. I meditated of sorts and listened to all the positive things that people had to say, and I didn't listen to anything negative that anybody had to say, whether it was a doctor or a person from the outside. I cut negative people out of my life, and I just decided to believe that I could do this. And I also had a wonderful physical therapist named Gian, who is a very spiritual and wonderful man, and took me every step of the way and never once faltered in the belief that I would be able to do everything that I wanted to do. And working with horses again has given me a lot of freedom because I never thought I would be able to do that again. And also going back to my career as a hairdresser also helped me heal because I suddenly felt worth, I had something worthwhile to give the community again.
If that makes any sense. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. But you were already doing healing things before the accident. What were you involved in before the accident that had to do with healing? Because there was quite a lot of stuff that you did that I did, and that was how we bonded together.
Well, I was a massage therapist, and I also did Reiki, and I have a certificate in herbal medicine. So I grew herbs, and I made tinctures and salves, and brewed teas for healing benefits. And I used massage for healing, and I also used Reiki for healing touch.
Right, right.
And the power of positive thinking.
Yeah, I had done some Reiki too, and I had also worked on that. So that was kind of a. I remember we did a trade. It was like a tarot reading we did that a couple times actually.
Yes,
a tarot reading, massage session, and at Leon and I were trying to buy a home, and we weren't very successful because I think really at that time, which was maybe late 2007, 2008, somewhere around there, it's really I think when the housing bubble started here in Florida, because.
Yeah.
It started to be like, okay, you wanted to buy, and then you'd submit all your paperwork to the mortgage companies, and then they wouldn't give you a loan, and it would be for whatever, and they just wouldn't grant a loan. So we went back and forth with that for quite some time before we actually moved to Lutz, and I think that's where we lost touch. And then I found out you were in the nursing home, and we came up and visited you. But,
and I really appreciated your visit. It meant a lot to me.
Well, I wished we could have done it more because at that point in time, it was my work schedule became crazy because I was taking care of the gentleman in Newport Richey, and that was really taking so much of my time, like 4 to 5 days a week, but it was days and nights. So I was literally packing the car every week and unpacking.
Right.
Really?
Well, I was very, very lucky because I had so many positive people around me during that horrible time in my life. I had people strangers actually even, were coming into my room and praying for me or you know, giving me good vibes. I had friends and family members who were calling me on the phone and coming to visit me every day, bathing me, just literally taking care of me and just giving me everything they had in the hopes that I would get better. And even when I got home, it was to Connecticut, it was the same, where I had positive vibes coming at me from every possible angle at every moment of every day. I was on many prayer chains, and I also believed in myself. You know, I believed that I would walk again. I believed I would get out of that wheelchair. I believed I would work again. I believed I would drive a car again. And I'm doing all of those things, albeit with a prosthesis, but I am doing them, and I can walk a couple of miles and still go about my day. I'm not jogging yet, but that's all right. I am riding horses, and I never thought I would be able to do that, but it was the power of positive thinking that mainly really, I think is what mainly really helped me to heal, because I never gave up hope on myself, and I just believed I could do it, and I asked the Great Spirit to bless me, and when I would start to get very low, that's when I would call on the Great Spirit and say, please, I need you to lift me up. I can't do this alone. And lo and behold, the Great Spirit would come and lift me up and gave me the strength to continue my exercises, to continue eating, to just stay positive and to get through the horrible time that I was in. And now looking back, I'm off all of the drugs, all the painkillers, I'm off all of them, and I am living life on my own accord. I'm living my life the way I want to once again.
So how do you think that the horses have played into your so-called therapy and turning your life back whole again?
Well, horses for me have always been very special animals. They've always done something for my spirit to make me feel good. So even when I first started working with them, just talking to them, and the way they knew something was wrong. They knew that they had to be more gentle around me, so they were softer with me and wouldn't spook. And just being with them, with their energy, because they're very intelligent animals, and their energy is just so strong and noble. And I would take that on as myself, and it was just a goal that I had set for myself to work with horses again. I accomplished that goal, and the horses themselves being such gentle and wise and noble animals and strong gave me strength. And then riding the horse again to have that bond of trusting that animal and trusting my body to control that very large animal, and the energy that you form between the mount and the rider, there's a real strong connection to the animal spirit world there, and you feed off of each other, and the horse reads your body language, and you read the horse's body language, and you begin to develop a natural motion together. And that was something I hadn't felt in a very long time, and to feel that once again radiating up into my being definitely helped me to heal inside, to heal my spirit, even more than physically healing, although it does physically heal me for my muscles, but there's a spiritual healing through the trusting of the animal and the animal trusting me.
Do you think that that horses especially have a main line in regards to empathy and feeling what humans feel?
Absolutely. The horses know when I'm sad. If I go there and I'm having a bad day, they know. And they'll come up and they'll nudge me and, you know, nibble on my hair. If I'm in a bad mood, they know, okay, we're just going to stand down. They know if I'm happy. They know when, you know, like I said, when I first came into the barn and I was wearing long pants, they couldn't see my prosthesis, but they knew that I was different. They could sense that I was not as physically capable as everyone else, and they were very gentle with me.
Interesting. I've been told that, and I'm not too familiar with horses. I have ridden, but rarely. But I've been told that a lot of times they're very, very similar to dogs, and especially in the realm of loyalty.
Yes.
Do you think that's a pretty accurate description of?
I do, yes. Go ahead. They're definitely very loyal. They're very loyal, and they're very intuitive. Horses are very, very intuitive. They can intuit your emotions, your feelings. If you're afraid of them, they know, and they'll take advantage. If you are comfortable with them and you are strong with them and you have faith in them, they know that, and they will feed off that as well.
Huh, interesting.
Very intuitive and animals.
I'm more of a dog person. I had an experience when I was younger where I fell off a horse.
Mm.
So I didn't get hurt, thank goodness, but it put enough of a scare in me to make me afraid of, you know, jumping on a horse and riding.
Falling off is very scary.
Yeah, yeah, and it was a miracle that I wasn't hurt. So I was, you know, I'm a little nervous around them, and my last interaction with a horse was when I was at a patient's and they had a horse, and I used to go out and feed, you know, I wouldn't feed it. I would feed it carrots and strawberries and things like that.
Right.
And that was my last reaction with them. So what is your life like now? How did you get back into the hairdressing? How did that happen?
I was actually very, very lucky. A girl that I went to grammar school with, because I'm from a very small rural area, has a hair salon, and I ran into her at a friend of ours' mother's funeral, actually, and she offered me a job. And I said, as soon as I get my prosthesis, I will talk to you. And as soon as I got it, I went down and I told her I'd like to start working, and she gave me the job. I only work very short days. I work 4-hour days, 3 days a week, but she gave me the opportunity to work again, and I jumped at that opportunity, and I work for her in Ashford, Connecticut, and it's been very uplifting for my spirit. Like I said, I feel like I'm finally giving something back to the community. I'm not laying in a bed anymore. I am now touching other people's lives by making them look good and feel good, and I wear dresses to work often, and people will ask me what happened, and I tell them my story, and sometimes I feel like I'm changing lives because people are always astounded by my story, and they always tell me they can't believe how strong I am or how amazing I am. And what my response usually to that is, you know, you never know how strong you are until you're faced with the whatever adversity you're going to have. And I don't think I did anything that anybody else wouldn't have done, because what else are you going to do? You're going to lay in a bed for the rest of your life? No, you're going to pull up your bootstraps and you're going to take what was given to you and you're going to try to push forward.
Yeah, that's all you can do. I was widowed at a very young age. I was widowed at the age of 28, and it would have been real easy for me to give up. I mean, my body was whole, but my mind and my emotions and everything were not. And
right.
I was alone for a really long time. I was really just totally afraid of relationships. It really affected me for a long time. And
yeah.
Living again, you know, you have to, again, like you said, it's partly time is a healer, and I think that it's our attitudes that change as we get old that help us heal
yes.
from some of the scars, you know. But I know it really held me back for a long time, and
right.
there was not a lot of trust in people in general.
I wasn't always as positive as I am now, and I'm still, even every day it's a challenge. Every day is a challenge for me, but I meet that challenge, and I rise above it. I was very sad for a very long time. I had to leave my home in Florida, and I had to leave my career and all of my friends and come back and live with my parents in Connecticut. And then when I lost my leg, I do remember thinking before I went in for that surgery, who's ever going to want me after this? And what actually ended up happening is, and I'm not seriously with anyone right now, but I've had a few boyfriends, and one of them I met in the ambulance right after my amputation. He was a wonderful young man. He was just too young for me, and I sent him on his way, wished him the best, but I've had several gentlemen who were interested in me, and they didn't care that my leg was missing. That was my own insecurity, which I still deal with from time to time, but I'm getting better with that. And I've come to realize also that if someone can't accept me for as wonderful as I am and as strong as I am for what I've been through, if they can't, I'm so much more than just my right foot. And
right. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
So much more than my right foot.
Right. And that's an amazing motivation for anyone to keep on going and not to forget the things that are blissful in life. Like obviously
right.
you do have bliss when you ride the horses. That's
yes, I do.
Really
and when I'm cutting hair. And when I'm painting.
And what are you painting now? I mean, what's your latest project?
I paint landscapes.
Uh-huh.
I paint landscapes. And I paint them all from my mind. I don't I paint everything from my mind. It comes from my heart. And I've done a lovely ocean scene recently. And I've also done some, I do a lot of greeting cards. And I've done a lot of rivers and lakes and forests, mainly for my mother and my family. That's what I mainly paint. And I've been doing a lot of greeting cards lately, actually, a lot of greeting cards.
I've picked up my brushes again, and I am working on some watercolors. I came to a big realization just recently that politics is a dead end, that it's really not going to matter who gets into the White House, and that everything surrounding the elections is pretty time-wasting. I can't put it
yeah.
any other way. It's time-wasting. It's taking away from my bliss. It's wasting my time, what available time I have. And I said, okay, this is the end. Now I have to do the things that are important. And painting is one. I'm learning how to knit. I'm learning how
to love knitting.
Yeah, I'm learning how to do sustainable things. Yeah, I have this idea where I'm going to be making, like, these little purses. And I thought, if I could make these and then line them nicely with some silk and stuff like that, I could probably, you know, sell them on Etsy or, you know, who
right.
knows, just develop a little niche market there.
I make a lot of scarves.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, I'll try that and see if I really like it. And I do. It's very relaxing. And,
it is very relaxing. I did that a lot when I was recuperating in the hospital bed. I did a lot of knitting. Excuse me. I did a lot of painting. I did a lot of poetry writing, and I did a lot of blogging when I was in my bed recovering.
And
I had over 100 surgeries. I had over 100 surgeries on my right foot trying to save it.
Wow.
Yes, that was a very trying time. But, you know, the blogging, actually, you know, because I blogged like it was basically like it was a diary, and I just recorded everything in the way that I wanted to say it. And people have read my blog and said that they were completely moved by how raw, because I didn't try to candy coat anything. And I said, well, why should I? I was like, I was going through this experience, and I wasn't trying to be like, oh, poor pity me. And I would write in every single post, I hope who's ever reading this, I hope this touches you some way. If you're going through anything similar to me, or if you know someone who might be going through something like this, I hope this helps you, because this is helping me. I hope it
yeah,
helps
because
you.
Writing
I hope
is
it blesses
a,
you.
Writing is a catharsis no matter what. It's a catharsis. It's a way to, when you pour open your heart and you put it on the printed page, it's almost like you're dumping it out. It's almost like a clearing of sorts. I can't explain
exactly.
it any other way.
Right.
But I know that that helps me immensely. And I've been through some emotional, it's really hard because lately I've been through some very emotional things, and they're not things that I can write about yet or talk about. So it's like I haven't been able to use that avenue for these particular
yes.
things that I'm going through right now. But, you know, that's okay because I can do other things like, you know, do my watercolors or I will be starting a master gardener class.
I saw that. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really, really just really fired up about that. I've really wanted to do the permaculture for so long, but the classes are just really out of my reach as far as finances go. And
right.
Even if I wanted to pay on installments, it's just not something I can afford. And I thought, well, this will be the next best thing. Maybe it would be good to just start the Master Gardener class. And then if
and then you can permaculture your own place.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, eventually I'm sure I'll take the permaculture when the money's right, but it's just not right now. So,
and if
you know,
join the Rare Fruit Society in Tampa, they meet once a month, and you can go down to the Rare, they meet down at the Bayshore Country Club or whatever that's called, and they meet there at the Rare Fruit Society. They meet there once a month, and they always have trees and plants for sale, and they also have giveaways. and all kinds of fruit trees and vegetable plants.
Wow.
And you can permaculture your whole entire yard with all kinds of fruit and vegetables that'll just keep coming back every year. And with each season, each month, you'll be getting a crop.
When you had the little house, you had quite a little garden going. Do you still have that same thing where you are now?
Yes, actually, my garden is doing wonderful. I've been harvesting broccoli, green beans, cucumbers. Beets are coming soon. I've got a lot of turnip greens that I've harvested. The summer squash and the zucchini are coming, and the winter squash will be coming soon as well. The tomatoes will be ready next month. Eggplants are coming along, and I've also been doing some trading. I've traded some turnip greens for broccoli scapes and basil and fresh snow peas and pea pods. And then with the herb garden, I've had chives, cilantro, thyme, basil, oregano, rosemary, parsley.
Yeah, rosemary and parsley at the front door. I don't know, there's something... Somebody told me about some kind of tradition for Key Westers and other Floridians, South Floridians. I never knew about this. They said you should always have rosemary at your front door, and I don't know what the tradition is, whether it's good luck.
Love
or
goes where your rosemary grows. So you're pulling your love in.
Okay, I got it now. But anyway, I have the rosemary at the door. At the front door, and I have the parsley there. And in the back, I have oregano and basil. Well, today we had Italian sauce made with my own tomatoes from the backyard with
delicious.
My own basil. And we eat meat rarely. Well, Leon eats more meat than I do, but we did have some meat today, so I made some meatballs. And I had some really tiny mini cheese ravioli. So yeah, we are harvesting things. We have the beans, and I'm going to be putting in a serious planting in September. So I'm trying to get the non-GMO seeds to get all that planted out before.
And I bought all organic heirloom seeds this year. And, you know, gardening is also another thing that, you know, to me, gardening is just like second nature. So I didn't even really think about it as being healing when I began. But
right.
when I'm out there weeding and harvesting and planting as well, but especially when I'm weeding and I'm harvesting, there is such a wonderful, calming, you know, beautiful give and take with the earth that I feel. And the nourishment that I get, I know that I'm getting nourished from the plant. And the earth is also getting nourished because, you know, I fertilize with manure. It's all organic, of course. And I compost. So I'm nourishing the earth, and the earth is nourishing me. And even though most people, my prosthetist can't believe it, that I walk barefoot, because most people can't. When I'm out there in my garden and I'm barefoot and I can feel the earth between my toes on my left foot, and there's just something really healing about knowing that as I'm harvesting this and I'm going inside and I'm putting it in my salad or I'm steaming it, it doesn't get any fresher than that. And every single nutrient is going into my body. And there's just something really wonderful about that.
So what do you think of the course that our country has taken, and do you think that a victory garden in everybody's residence is going to be necessary?
I do believe it is going to be necessary. I think it's necessary now. The turn that our country has taken scares me to death, if you want to know the truth. I'm very concerned about the state of our nation. I'm very, very concerned. I feel like young people today don't understand the connection to our food, whether it's from the garden or whether it's meat. They don't understand where that food is coming from. They don't understand that a genetically modified plant, its seeds are not going to produce. And if something falls apart, we will have no food. They don't.
Yeah.
They don't. they don't seem to understand that. And I think it's very important for everybody to start educating the younger generations that growing a garden and being self-sustaining is very important just to be able to survive. Because who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, it's almost like it's just a big disconnect between...
Big.
You know, I mean, the thing that I've said to myself over the past couple of months, several months, maybe a year, is that we have to learn the arts that our grandmothers knew and that our
Absolutely.
Grandmothers...
Absolutely.
Like knitting.
Baking.
And gardening and food preservation,
yes.
canning and
yes.
jarring.
Canning,
and,
yes. And canning and
make,
drying.
And making things. And, you know, it's really funny, but I stopped buying things like paper towels, which were just the biggest waste of
yes,
money.
I use cloth.
Yeah, somebody
I've been
said,
using
well,
cloth since Florida.
Yeah. It's somebody said, well, this is just cash in the trash. And I said to myself, God, that's really, really true. It is cash in the trash. So now,
yeah.
you know, we have stacks and stacks, and we've always had stacks and stacks of, like, beat-up towels that we've used on the car or, you know, used for cleanup. And I said to myself, we need to be using these. And I have a washer. I don't care if I have to throw them in the wash and hang them
up. I don't
up.
Even use paper napkins. I remember my mom would come visit in Florida, and I would have my linen napkins. And she would, oh, it's so fancy, a linen napkin. And I would just giggle, and I'd say, Mom, I don't use paper napkins. There's no sense in a paper napkin.
No, uh-uh. It's like learning how to do things completely opposite of what we were taught. We
right.
were taught, you know, like in the me decade, for instance, in the 80s, everybody had, and money was plentiful. And
yes.
it was almost like you had those paper things because they were convenient, and then you could throw them away when you were done. But now
right.
it's like, you know, I'm knitting things like washcloths and things like that
yep.
that can be, you know, out of cotton yarn.
Yep.
Those scrubby type things.
Yep, those are wonderful.
You know. So
I have
I'm
a few of those. A girlfriend of mine made me a couple of those. I make scarves, and I'm going to move on to hats and sweaters very soon. Because those are very useful things, especially up here in the north. It gets cold. You need a hat and a scarf and a sweater, and I would love to learn to get better at sewing. I'm very
yeah.
good at hand sewing. I'm not good at machine sewing.
Yeah.
And I love baking. I bake bread. And I, you
oh,
know, people have...
I'm baking my bread too. We don't buy it anymore.
Oh. People have really lost touch with that. Like, I have a girlfriend of mine who there was some chicken in the fridge, and she had some ducks outside. And I said, oh, why don't, I was joking. And I said, oh, why don't you just catch one of your ducks? And, you know, the little girl got very upset, and she was like, stop saying that, stop saying that. And I was like, well, what? And I pointed at the chicken in the fridge, and I said, well, that used to be a chicken. And the little girl looked at me, and she's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, that used to be a chicken, you know, muck, muck, muck. And she said, no, that came from the grocery store.
Oh, my God.
And she could not understand that chicken was chicken. And then her mother got very mad at me when I was trying to help her make the connection, because she was like, now she's never going to eat that. And I was like, well, she needs to know where her food comes from. It doesn't just come
yeah.
from the grocery store. It doesn't come from Publix or cash and carry. I'm like, it comes from, you know, an animal. You know, it comes from the earth. And
right.
I'm very thankful up here. We're a hunting family, and we go out and hunt most of our meat, and we fish most of our meat. We do use the grocery store as well, and we grow a lot of our own food. We do also, you know, buy it from the co-op and from the grocery store. We're not, you know, holier than thou or anything like that. But we try, you know, we try very hard to know where our food comes from and supply most of it ourselves.
And that's really all you can do is I think each family has to try to do what they can do. I've been around some environmentalists, for instance, that are very, very judgmental about what people do, or you shouldn't drink that bottle of water and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you get to the point where nothing you're going to do is going to please everybody. I mean, the things that you do
right.
will not please everybody. But if you're really, really trying within your own sphere of influence to make a radical change, even if it's only one or two, there's
right.
there's interesting school of thought on this, too. And I don't know if people have heard about deep green resistance. But deep green resistance, when you read about it, it's Derek Jensen. The book is Derek Jensen, Eric McBay, and Lierre Keith. It's an interesting book on the common on the current environmentalism, but Derek Jensen's take is we don't have to feel guilty about not being completely green, because the
right.
worst polluters are the corporations.
Right.
So if we put it in that big grand scale, he said, if we rode our bike every day, you know, if most of us rode our bike every day to work, just to do that to save fossil fuels, it wouldn't
right.
make a dent in
right.
the carbon output, because
right.
the real polluters are the corporations.
The corporations. And I'm very lucky up here in rural Connecticut. We have a pretty good sharing community. Not everyone, of course, but like my friend Robert, he's got chickens, and he has his 16 layers. And, you know, he's got chickens every day, and they lay. And my friend Christina has a wonderful garden, and a few other people I know also have chickens and ducks. And there's a really good little trade circle going on where I cut Robert's son's hair, and he gives me eggs. Occasionally gives me eggs. He doesn't always have them to give. My friend Christina has her garden. I have mine. We trade back and forth. I would actually like to get a goat and some of my own chickens, and I would like to start making goat cheese, because then I could, and soap as well, because then I could trade my cheese and my soap for, you know, whatever it is that I might need. My girlfriend Elizabeth makes soap, and I have not yet gotten a chance to trade anything with her, but I can't wait to start trading with her soaps. So there's a nice little trading community up here. It's pretty green up here, and I'm very, very thankful for that. There's a huge organic movement up here, and it's really wonderful. My girlfriend that I'm actually at her house right now, her family eats 90% organic all the time. People are seeming, at least in my immediate area, are kind of seeming to be very aware of the fact that the greening of our planet is very, very important to heal everyone.
Yeah. We have a Tampa Bay Time organization here where they've put it together on the computer. And, you know, your hour given is just as important as, like, in other words, I could give an hour's worth of, you know, service to an elderly person, you know, hospice, as a respite or something with the work that I normally do. And
mm-hmm.
then that might entitle me to an hour's worth of legal counsel. And I was trying to explain this to a few people, and they didn't understand it. And I said, well, the whole point is the hour of service that I provide to you is no more or less important than the hour of service that you provide for me. Even
exactly.
if you're a doctor, attorney, or whatever, there's no hierarchy and there's no power over. And
right.
I thought, but these people I was explaining it to, for some reason they didn't understand that, or maybe they just didn't register that. Maybe I didn't explain it right. I don't know. But in any case, I think that when you look at the services that we can all provide a community, it's all very, very important and necessary for that community to function together as a whole.
Absolutely.
And that's why when you can do a bartering type of exchange service, that works great for a community. But, you know, as the dollar fails, which I really feel that that's coming soon, this is all we're going to have.
You know, I was just going to say something very similar to that. I was going to say when the big one hits, and whatever that is, you know, the corporations are going to fail, and all several people who don't quite understand the simplicities of bartering and living close to the earth are going to have a very hard time, and it's going to be the people more like you and I, when I even put myself into this category, it's so very loose because I'm such a neophyte, but it's going to be people like you and me who understand gardening, understand knitting, understand the power of bartering, understand the give and take between nature that are actually going to lead our nation back to, or forward, I should say, that are going to lead our nation forward into whatever it's going to become after Babylon falls, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm actually, you know, I'm still trying to finish that book, Alas, Babylon. It's an interesting book, but a friend of mine, Josh, lent it to me, and I still haven't finished the bloody thing. And it's really a story of Florida. It was written in the late 1950s, and what would happen if a nuke went off. And they even mention MacDill in the book, MacDill Air Force Base. But it's supposed to take place like north of Tampa, and they've guesstimated like around Mount Dora area or something like that. I really have to sit down and finish this book because it goes into that survival mode and survival capacity, and I have not gotten to that point yet in the book. I really need to get to that and finish that book up. I think, I don't know if they did a movie of it. If they didn't, they probably should have. So, you know. But anyway, I think you're right, because and I think the people that are the healers.
Yes.
Are you there?
I'm here. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I think the people that are the healers are going to be the ones that are very, very important in a community as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why the healers are going to heal the nation. They're going to be the ones who will lead us forward, or we maybe. I can't even put myself in that category, but. Because that would be just so presumptuous. I might be able to be somebody's handmaid, you know, I can be a healer's handmaid is what I'll be able to do and help them. But even that is important in itself.
You know, there's another book that I recommend to people highly to read it because it was written in the early 1990s, but really a lot of the things that are happening today were noted in that book, and it was a very futuristic book. In fact, a lot of times if you go looking for it in a bookstore, you'll find it under New Age, or you'll find it under Pagan, or you'll find it under science fiction sometimes. So
wow.
Really there's a category for it, but it's Starhawk's book, The Fifth Sacred Thing.
I've seen that book. I have not read it, but I have seen it.
I would encourage you and anybody else that's listening that has not read it, that you should get it and read it. It's really quite an amazing book, and there's a lot of comparisons to the things that are happening now that are happening. They talk about water wars. There's all kinds of things like that in there. They talk about the Southwest area of the United States as being kind of like without borders and kind of like a DMZ.
Yes.
A demilitarized zone, which really it's becoming that very rapidly. And
when I was still living in Florida, I had been, before my accident, obviously, I had been trying to collect some people to come back up north with me, and only because my family has a very large piece of property that could be farmed very easily, and we have a fantastic water supply on my property, and I was, you know, trying to convince people to come up here with me to start farming my land. I wanted to put an orchard, and I knew I can't do it alone. And I wanted to put a small orchard and get some farm animals, like goats and chickens mostly, and a couple of horses just because I love them, and maybe a cow, although I'm not opposed to goat milk. They're much easier. And I wanted to start turning my property into not really a commune, because that has such a throwback kind of cliche to it, but to more of a cooperative. And I couldn't really get anybody on board, but my family now on my property, it's myself and my mother and my stepfather and my aunt and my uncle, and her mother and her son and his wife are going to be building a house on the property as well. And we do garden the property, and I've been talking to my aunt lately about mm-hmm. getting maybe some chickens. And I also have said that we should get a meadery, because there's a shortage on bees. And right now you can get a government grant if you want to do something with bees. And I would love to do some beekeeping and make mead. And that would make revenue for the property and turn it into a self-sustaining farm.
You know, those are all really good ideas, and I think that if you actually put that call out again for people to come up and help you farm there, you might get a different result this time, you know, because I think people are really looking for safe places to be in
right.
A place where they can farm, and I don't think Florida is as safe as people think it is in the number one in the cities, and number two, just because of the traumatic weather that we've been seeing.
And there's not enough fresh water.
No.
There's not enough fresh water in Florida.
No. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
And
then, of course,
the soil.
The weather challenges, where it's just days like today are just so bloody hot. And then other days are like, we had her Tropical Storm Debbie, which flooded out Clearwater Beach, areas of the beach, St. Pete Beach. It flooded
right.
Parts of Tampa, South Tampa. People were water skiing on the streets on Clearwater
Beach. Wow. And, you know, the soil in Florida is so very sandy, and a lot of times, like at my property that I had in Florida, when I bought it, there had been a flood in Zephyr Hills several years before, about 5 or 6 years before that, and all the topsoil got washed away in that flood, and I had nothing but hard pan. So it was very difficult. It was very, very difficult to dig and grow, and I had to do layering. I layered newspapers and compost, and I did I can't remember what it's called, but it's layering compost. And that's how I had to do all of my gardens. I couldn't actually dig down into the soil. I had to create my own. And if another flood comes through, that'll get washed away. And Florida has floods a lot.
Now, we're getting towards the end, Kelly, and I just wanted to thank you. We've got like a minute and 3 seconds.
Okay.
3 minutes, 3 minutes. Do you have any thoughts and bits of wisdom on healing and that you can tell our listeners? Anything for motivation?
Well, everyone just keep moving forward and keep thinking forward. Believe in yourselves. Always stay positive. And remember that every little thing that you do that's positive makes a huge difference. Makes a huge difference in the whole entire world.
Yeah, it sends the vibrational energies out.
Yeah.
That's me, I think, and that's what I'm learning too. I need to cut out the negative surrounding me and move forward. I agree with you completely
on
that.
Remember, no matter how bad your situation is, it really could always be worse. And be thankful for being alive, and be thankful that you can try to make a change, because even trying to make a change, you're halfway there.
Yeah, because the intent is there. It's all about intention. Yeah, I agree. Well,
and don't
I will be in touch with you, Kelly, and just spread the link around and spread the love and the joy. And I want to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and if you want to go to that blog post, anybody, and leave a comment. Just remember it's wisewomenmedia.posterous.com. That's posterous.com.
And if you'd like to have me again, just let me know.
Okay, I sure will, and we'll talk soon.
Peace be with you.
Okay, and to you. Bye.
Bye.
Hello?
Hello?
Andrea? Hi.
Yeah.
This is to our listeners. This is Andrea, who's going to be taking over for the second hour.
Andrea is
teaching a new method or modality of yoga. So she's a healer from a different aspect than what Kelly is. And Andrea, give us your full name and tell us about the event that's on Facebook and what you're going to be doing with this yoga. And tell us a little bit about how it's different from other modalities.
Modality. That's a really good word. I'm going to snag that if you don't mind to use that, because that perfectly describes what I'm doing. I don't want to say it's a new style because I think that might confuse people, but the word modality, that fits perfectly. I'll give everyone my full name, but my full name is very long and sounds very regal and very arrogant, and that's really not me. My full name is Andrea Dean Vanskoy, but I go by Andy, and that's what I like for everyone to call me. And the yoga that I have designed, the modality, it's my own creation. It's a mixture of your standard yoga, some of your Kundalini breathing exercises, but it's also a lot of stretching and a lot of meditation. Now, on the surface, people might look at that and say, well, yeah, that's like any other yoga. No, it's not. And that seems to be the roadblock that I'm running into, because people can't seem to wrap their heads around the fact that there are, you can stylize yoga to yourself. You can do what you need to do, and it may not be the established, uppity, sometimes cliquish yoga, which I'll get into that in a little bit. I'm running into really a lot of the cliquish attitudes. And it's really a shame. And you can do what you need to and alter, truly alter, and it still work for you. I'll give you a little bit of background on myself and tell you why I've begun this now and why it's so important to me to help people with it. I was training for the Olympics at 10 years old in gymnastics. My coach thought he was Bella Caroli. He ruined every single one of us, told us that we sucked. They have to remember, in the 70s, the Russians were the team to beat. That we
right.
all sucked. We all sucked. We were never going to beat the Russians anyway. And so basically it was next. So as a 10-year-old child, I spent the next 25 years or so of my life trying to prove him wrong. I continued with gymnastics, heaping more damage on an already damaged body. Unbeknownst to me, I had two pretty severe birth defects. I continued doing gymnastics despite them. Didn't find out how severe they were until I was an adult and the damage was already done. Because back when I was a child, you didn't run to the doctor. I think my parents, gosh, I can't even count how many times they took me to the doctor. It just wasn't done. So a lot of things that people had, even children, went undiagnosed. Both of my parents are country folk, using old country folk cures. And I really enjoyed the last part of the conversation you were just having, because that is, I've grown up a survivalist and a doomsayer. That's what I grew up with. My parents are, for lack of a better word, country folk witches, both of them. So, you know, we didn't go to doctors. Everything was home cures. So I had a damaged body, didn't know it. Picked up rhythmic gymnastics, had already been doing ballet since I was 5, had to stop that, continued with ballet, therefore ruining my feet, picked up baton, started doing rhythmic gymnastics, was a cheerleader in high school, and by the time I got to high school, it wasn't waving pom-poms anymore. It was the brutal gymnastics. I was dropped during a stunt that went bad, landed on my head, which has left me with a neurological impairment.
Wow.
I continued, picked up, continued doing gymnastics, continued teaching, taught private dance, continued teaching baton, and at 30 years old decided I wanted to take up Kung Fu. And I won tournament after tournament after tournament, finally retiring at the age of 33. My body forced me into retirement. I went to the doctor for pain in my knees, found out that I not only had a compressed spine, I had severe degenerative bone disease in my left knee and moderately severe degenerative bone disease in my other knee. I've been in a couple of car wrecks, one pretty severe about 3 years ago where I was slammed into the back of by a person on their cell phone, not paying any attention, which now has left me with a disc in my neck that is actually pushing into my spinal cord. So the
wow.
nerve damage I have in my arms from the brutal beatings I gave my body as a child in gymnastics, that has been compounded now. My hands shake. My arms shake. I have circulatory problems in my legs. And I'm 43 years old. I've always wanted to do yoga. But the body that I had when I was a child that proclaimed me to be the next Nadia Comaneci is long gone. Very long gone. And I'd always looked at yoga, and I was like, gosh, I want to do yoga. If it was only 25 years ago, I could do it. And then I thought, you know, there's no reason why I shouldn't do it just because I can't bend like a pretzel anymore. So I started developing my own stylized version, combined it with breathing, combined it with meditation. I am a doctor of motivation, so I know how to do meditation. I have meditation tracks for sale. I do all kinds of things to keep myself calm and relaxed. And I thought, I bet other people could benefit from this. So why not? So one thing happened after another. I had a very prolific 7-year writing career. I had quite a bit of fame and good fortune with that and then retired from that. Then I started getting restless. I'm currently studying to be a certified herbologist, which I'm hoping one day to parlay into a naturopath. I'm also a minister. I went back and got a master's degree. Now I also have a doctorate degree. But I thought, what else can I do? What else can I do? You know, I want to stay in shape. People have always called me a natural teacher. In fact, I taught, you know, as I said earlier, I taught baton. I taught gymnastics. I taught rhythmic gymnastics. I taught private dance. I've always been a teacher. And people have always come to me, you should teach. You should give motivational speeches. You should this. You should that. And I thought, why can't I take what I do with my yoga, parlay that into my motivation, and tell people, yes, you can. You're overweight. So what? I promise you, my yoga, I can alter it to where you can do it. You're not flexible? Don't worry. I'll give you something else similar to do, and you'll see some benefit. Are you going to be like a rubber band? No, but at least you're getting exercise, and you're getting benefit. And
wow.
So that is what I'm trying to do with my yoga. I'm trying to parlay my motivation, my teaching, and I got the best compliment when my yogi let me know that I could pass the course. He said that my knowledge was just fabulous, and it was just my spirituality just shone through, and he knew that I was going to be great in the yoga community, and that really felt good. That really felt good because there's no telling how many students he gets a year. I can only imagine. And for him to say that about me, I was like, wow.
About how you're going to be doing the class and what's going to make it different than other classes.
Well, one of the ways that I'm offering my classes, I'm trying to get in at some local yoga studios, and I can tell you it's not very easy. I'll get into that in a minute. But I'm also offering courses online via Google Hangout. and everybody has laughed at me. What do you mean you're offering courses via Google Hangout? How are you supposed to do that? And so I finally went to a friend of mine who's owned three multi-million dollar businesses in her life. And I said, look, am I crazy? You know, why is everybody laughing at this? It makes perfect sense to me. You've got people that are homebound. You've got people who may not be able to afford to put gas in their car. You've got people who maybe their cars don't run and they can't afford to get them fixed. You've got people who are maybe raising children and don't have time to run out. You've got people who are elderly and can't move well. And you've got some people, I've even run into a couple of people that have said, look, I don't have a trophy body. And I don't feel comfortable being around these skinny fitness trophy types. I don't want people looking at me and judging me. And so that's what I told my friend. I said, you know, I've had so many people tell me that. And she said, no. She said, your plan is absolutely great. She said, anybody who's laughing at you apparently does not know how the business world works. And I said, well, that's what I plan to do.
You have to find what the plan that's going to you have to find what people want. You know, even if they don't know what they want, you have to offer something that they're going to want. And
absolutely.
I think you're absolutely right on track because, you know, there's a yoga studio that I use, which is local to me. But when I'm having a very hard money situation, you know, I don't want to. She's already told me, you know, Anita, you can come whenever you want. You know, I love her generosity. She said, don't think that, you know, I'm not going to pay it forward. She said, right now I know you're having a rough time. She said, just come anyway and you can square with me later. And she said, if I didn't believe in paying it forward, I wouldn't be doing this. So I thought, well, that was really cool. And she did, I still want to go there. I just haven't had the opportunity with the schedule that I've been working. And then when I do have the free time, I don't have the gas. So,
absolutely.
You know,
and my online classes are going to be $5 per person per class. That way, if you're sick 1 week, oh, well, gosh, I've already paid for the month, and I'm not even going to be able to use this. And then, gosh, I've been sick 2 weekends in a row now, so I've blown my yoga money for this month. No, if you feel sick, then you don't attend my online class. You come back when you feel better. You PayPal me the money. You get the information when the class is going to be, and you show up. Very simple. So $5 will work into anyone's budget, and if someone can't pay but they really want to come, I'll be like, well, do you have something you can send me through the mail? I mean, do you grow vegetables? Can you bring me some vegetables? Do you have yard eggs? Can you bring me some yard eggs? I grow my own herbs, so I don't need anything like that. But you know, do you sew? Can you make me a pair of yoga pants? You know, if so, you know, tell me how much the yoga pants cost, and you can come attend my classes until you've paid it off that way.
Yeah, there's always a way to trade and exchange a service. Like I was just. When I was talking to Kelly, that's kind of how we started to get to know
each other. I've heard that. I'm very big on bartering, very, very big on bartering, and it's really disheartening how many people have the attitude that that's not good enough or whatever you can offer them in exchange for whatever you're wanting from them isn't good enough. And it's like, really? You should be happy that in today's day and age someone is even willing to barter with you. And stop being so greedy.
I like the Tampa Bay time because it really doesn't matter what you're exchanging for. Like I was explaining to Kelly, it was like I could give a half an hour of respite service for somebody's mother so they can run out to go to the store or something and take care of their ailing mother. And then I get that same amount of time back, like, say, in legal counsel or whatever.
Right, right.
And so there's no power over and there's no hierarchy and there's no my service is better than your service or my service is more valuable than your service. You put in a half an hour of service or an hour of service or whatever it may be, and that's what you get back in some other kind of service. So,
see, and that's great. And I really, like you said, I really can't stand that, oh, well, what you're offering isn't as good as what I'm offering, so forget it. I really can't stand that because, and that probably, and I know people are that way because I ran into that when I was an author. I offered to do a banner exchange with people because I had been very fortunate. When I first became an author, I was a bestseller within 2 months of being on the market. I was a bestseller through Borders. I hit their number one in 1995, which, as everyone knows, Borders at one time was one of the largest bookstore chains in the entire world. My first book hit Borders number one within 2 months of being on the market. So I was very fortunate. So I started my magazine, which I still have. I actually have two magazines now since I retired from writing in January of this year. And my books are still on the market, and I use those to help my little animal charity that I have, the Anti-Surrender Committee with Lisa Polo. I use the money that I make from my books that are still on the market to put into that. 100% of my profits from my yoga are going to go into the Anti-Surrender Committee. And I used to run into that all the time. Well, would you like to do a banner exchange with me? Oh, well, I don't know. I'll have to think about it. And I'm like, really? I'm a multiple-time best-selling author. I'm paid for appearances. I was a celebrity at one time. This is going to come across as arrogant. There's really no way I could say it and not sound like I'm being totally pretentious. So I'm just going to say it and hope that everyone will understand that the point I'm trying to make. You're a nobody. No one's ever heard of you. You're just starting your career, and yet you have to think about whether or not you want a banner on my website when at one time I was getting a few hundred hits every couple of hours. And you have to think about that. So I know exactly what you mean about people being ungrateful. And I'm running into that now with my yoga. I was email, back and forth conversation with a local yoga studio, and I'm not going to say which one it is, but I can't tell you how disappointed I was in them. And I mean local as in I could probably walk there from my house. And the person was like, oh, well, I'd like to see what tell me about your yoga. Where can I see it online? I'd like to see some examples of it. And I said, you can't see examples of my yoga. It's something I've worked on myself for many years, but I've never let anyone else see it because I haven't been certified. And I don't think I had the right to teach anyone yoga without being certified. I mean, that's a train in the litigious world that we live in today. If you are not certified in something, you're just inviting trouble. That is just a train wreck waiting to happen, which is why I also won't give people herbal advice until I get my degree as a certified herbologist. I just don't feel that I have any right, not being an herbologist, not being a naturopath, I don't have any right to be doling out advice. So it was the same with my yoga. I was not going to say, oh, well, you need to try my style of yoga when I wasn't certified to teach yoga. So I said,
right.
I don't have anything to show you online. No one has ever seen, except for my husband when he happens to come into the den and sees me doing my yoga, no one has ever seen my yoga. I said, I'll be happy to come to your place and teach a free lesson. And if people like it, great. And if they don't, no worries. I got no further emails. And I was like, really? Really? This is the world that we live in? And the thing I'm hearing from a lot of people, too, is, oh, well, we have yoga similar to that. No, 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 you don't. No, you don't. And I can guarantee you, you don't. Because I was talking to one place, oh, yeah, we have people in chairs. We have people up against the wall. And it's like, no. No, there is no up against the wall with my yoga. There's, you know, if you need to be in a chair, then because you can't use your legs or something like that, okay, that's fine. But as for, oh, we have people that do this and we have people, no, no. My yoga is 100% completely different. It is something that everyone can do. It's not a competition. It's not, oh, well, I'm more flexible than you are. Look what I can do. Oh, I'm thinner than you are. I know I look great in my yoga pants. Oh, well, I'm so enlightened. This is what I can do. When I first started, I was this type of person. Now look at me. And that's what I'm running into. And it's like, this just, it's really disappointing because a lot of these people are throwing out the namastes and throwing out the peace, love, and light. And it's like, really, as pretentious and arrogant as you are, how dare you?
Do you think people be afraid of competition within their own yoga community, and that might be a drawback, and why you've received kind of like a chilly reception from them?
It could be. It could be because I asked a friend of mine who's owned the businesses before. She's a marketing guru type person. I asked her the same thing. I said, because I was really disheartened when I emailed her today. I said, I don't get this. It's not about the money. It's not about prestige. I know for a fact, because I've had people tell me, that there's a lot of people out there like me that maybe have done extensive damage to their bodies from being athletic, from being driven. And if not that, then maybe they were in severe car crashes like I was 3 years ago. I know there's people out there like me who, if they were flexible at one time, they're not any longer. So
right.
Many people could benefit from my yoga. And she said basically the same thing, that your competition, they're afraid that you're going to take people away from their other yoga instructors. Now I'm like, oh, okay, so that's what it's all about. Don't get butts into the studio. Make sure that the people that are already there get their fair share, which that's fine. But you know what? I think I would rather have people, and maybe this is why I've never been like mega successful in business, because I have the wrong mindset. Instead of worrying about placating people's egos, how about you get people into the studio so they can get healthy?
Yeah.
So you can work on their self-esteem. So you can tell them, it's okay that you're not like a rubber band anymore. It's okay that you can't do backflips and everything that you did when you were 20 years old, because I'm in that category. You know, it's okay. It's okay. No one here cares. You do what you can.
And no one's sitting in judgment.
Exactly.
You know,
and as long as you get benefit from the class, that is what is important. And my husband tells me I'm crazy. He's one that says, you've got the wrong business mindset. You want to help people. And I said, yeah, I guess that is the wrong business mindset, because every place that I've called, oh, well, I'd like to see this style of yoga online. Sorry, it's not online. And then, of course, I'm getting the, from one yoga studio I contacted, oh, I already do something similar. No, I can promise you, you don't. And that's also my problem. I am completely unconventional. I not only think outside the box, there is no box. The box burned down and the ashes blew away ages ago. There is no box. I do things that people say, well, you can't do that. Well, no, you're not supposed to do that. Well, I don't care what you're supposed to do. I'm going to do what I feel is best for me and best for the people that I'm trying to help.
Exactly. And there are therapeutic types of yoga. And I was taking a class that was therapeutic myself. How can you explain your modality and how it would be different from other therapeutic forms of yoga?
What I'm doing with my yoga is you're not expected to hold poses that you may not be able to hold. I look at a lot of yoga poses. They are hard on the knees because I've done them. I know I had to get certified to teach yoga, and I had to reach deep down and push my body again. There's a lot of yoga poses that I don't believe are healthy on the ankles. I certainly do not believe they're healthy on the wrists, because my wrists are extremely damaged from so many years of punching the floor, doing back handsprings, and punching the beam and things like that. My wrists are just in terrible shape. There's so many yoga poses I have tried that are hard on the wrists, hard on the ankles, hard on the knees. There's so many I see people doing triangle poses, and they're so low to the ground, and they're so perfectly positioned, and it's like, really? Your regular, everyday person is
okay.
going to look at that and say, well, I can't do that.
Right.
So there's ways to modify that, and I have done that. I have modified the triangle pose. I have modified everything. Most of my yoga is stretching, breathing, remaining calm, and throwing my motivation in there. It's okay if you're not perfect. It's okay if you can't do the exercise at all. That's okay. Here's another thing you can try, which is similar. Put your hands here. Now, do what I just showed you to do. Do you feel that? That's your body moving. Keep working with that until you can move easier and easier and easier. And then what do you know? Eventually, you might be able to do what everyone else is doing. Doesn't matter how long it takes you.
Right.
See, my lessons are completely personalized. There's no strain on the ankles. There's no strain on the knees. There's no strain on the wrists. You're not, oh, well, this is the style of yoga I'm doing, and so here's the exercises. And, yes, I can alter them, but they're still basically the same. No. No, I'm going to alter what I do if you can't do it until we find what will work for you. And I've had people tell me, oh, well, you can't do that, or it's not yoga. Says who? Says who? And who are you to tell me what I'm doing isn't yoga?
Well, I know there's so many different kinds of yoga now, it's really hard to keep track. I mean, it really is.
It really is. And I've looked at all of them, and it's like, really? God, had you caught me 25 years ago? Oh, please. I'd be right in the midst of this putting all of y'all to shame. Not anymore. And see, that's unfortunately a lot of the thing, too, that people are running into. Oh, well, if you don't do it like this, then you're not doing yoga. And, of course, me being the snarky little tart I am, I also want to say back to them, and if you're being so judgmental, then you also either need to change what yoga you're doing. You need to take some self-esteem classes so you don't feel the need to trash others or feel defensive because someone's doing something different than you. Or you need to do some more meditation, and you need to stop worrying about pretentiousness and appearances. You need to actually live what you're out there throwing at everybody else.
Yeah. And what do you think now, as a yoga instructor, when you go through the training, does it also make you more conscious of what you're eating, what you're breathing, what you're, you know, just what you're doing and what you're taking in?
For someone who isn't used to doing yoga, yes, it will. But for me, I eat healthy all the time. I've eaten healthy for years just because I haven't been able to be as active and flexible as I once was. I still eat healthy. My husband and I walk 2 miles a night. I've done my yoga every single day. I've done my breathing. I've done my meditation. I offer my meditation downloads on my one website that I have. So I've always, I live what I put out there. But probably the other important thing is, I don't judge people, nor do I think I'm superior. And it's really unfortunate that in the yoga community, I'm running into that. And I talked to a friend of mine earlier, and she just said, look, this is the way people are nowadays. People cannot wrap their heads around someone like you who refuses to conform. People just don't understand that. because most people are too happy to follow the crowd and do what everybody else is doing. And someone like you who comes along claiming that you're doing something totally different, well, if they can't go online and find it, then you're a liar and you're a flake and you're a fake. And she said, that's exactly what they're thinking. I'd be willing to bet on it. And I said, it would be a shame if you're right, but I have a feeling you are. So I'm prepared. If I can't get any yoga studios in the Newport Richey area to pick me up and let me teach there a couple of days a week, I'd like to turn this into a career. I mean, I work full-time now. I'd like to turn my yoga into a career, but with so many closed-minded people in the area, I may not ever be able to do that. And it's like I told my husband, I said, you know, if I'm relegated to teaching my classes online, and I plan to offer DVDs of my yoga and meditation combinations, because I start with the yoga and the stretching, and I end with meditation. And it's not just one or two. It's not all pretentious. It's very calming, very soothing, very serene meditation. Yeah, if I have to do that, selling my DVDs and having my classes strictly on Google until people catch up with not being following the Pied Piper, then I will. And sometimes it's not about money.
Of the herd mentality, and do you think that there is a herd mentality now?
Oh, I know for a fact there's a herd mentality. There's been a herd mentality for I don't know how many years, but I can tell you that I really should not be surprised at how things have gone with my yoga, because my publishing writing career was the same way. I very, very proudly self-published my books. I was an independent author self-publishing my books through Lulu.com. I made absolutely no apologies for that. I was very proud of it. That not only gained me a great deal of respect in the writing community, it gained me a great deal of haters. I had threads and hate posts started about me on forums by people who not only did not know me, they'd never read a shred of my work. They just picked up where someone else online had been trashing me and started doing it themselves. I was hated.
Wow.
I was either loved or hated everywhere I went. And it was because I refused to conform. You see, when you're an author, you're only supposed to want to be with the traditional publishing houses. I had a friend tell me 7 years ago, you know, if you self-publish, no one will ever take you seriously, and your career will be over before it started. Really? Number one bestseller at Borders. One of my books has stayed on number one on Amazon Kindle. I was a compensated headlining celebrity guest at conventions I did. I was paid for my appearances. I sold out of books at nearly every single convention I did. Had security called on me one time at one convention because the convention promoters had no idea who I was, really, when they booked me, and I had people lined up blocking the aisles to get to my table. But then on the other hand, I had people vilify me as everything but the Antichrist, because how dare I? How dare I be proud of being self-published? You're not supposed to be proud to be self-published. Self-publishing is for losers who can't get published any other way. So how dare I be proud? And how dare I say that I'm a success? Because Amazon doesn't matter. Borders didn't matter. I actually had someone tell me one time. Now, this person has never been a bestseller through Borders. Before Borders changed their policies back quite a number of years ago, they used to allow, if you got a kind and charitable manager, and at Gulfview Square Mall in the Walden Books that used to be there, which was a subsidiary of Borders, the manager of that store was very, very community and independent-minded. So she loved having independent authors in the store. And so she had me in the store, ordered my books. That was back before Borders clamped down and couldn't allow it anymore. That's where I became a bestseller. Undeniable. I actually had an author who was extremely jealous of me tell me one time, oh, well, yeah, you saying that you're a bestseller through Borders, that's like if I went to a lake and caught a fish and nobody else fished in the lake that day, I could say that the fish I caught was the biggest and was a record fish. And what was so sad was 98% of people on this forum all were, oh, well, who is this? Why do we hate her? Oh, we hate her? Oh, okay. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You being a bestseller through Borders doesn't mean anything. You need to be a New York Times bestseller for it to mean anything. So, yeah, herd mentality it's rampant, and it is sickeningly prolific. And I'm running into the same thing with my yoga. Oh, you're unconventional? No, not interested. So you would rather not at least let me come teach one class, and if you don't like me, then fine. You don't like me, and you don't want me teaching yoga. Then maybe get more people in your studio who could benefit and be healthy. Nice attitude.
Do you think there's some element of jealousy, the fact that you were able to go so far by self-publishing and perhaps they were not able to?
Oh, that was a given when I was a self-published author. I mean, I was considered a legend. I did what was deemed impossible. I became a bestseller through a major bookstore chain. That's impossible. If you're a self-published author, you're a loser and you're pathetic, and you only self-publish because you don't have any other choice because your work's stuck and nobody wants you. So how dare I be a bestseller? I must have paid somebody off. I must have known someone. I'm lying. It was the same old, same old.
That's crazy. I've never, you know, that's just it. We should, in this day and age, we should be lifting people up. We should be lifting each other up. And maybe in regards to the yoga, people are just afraid of, do you think they possibly could be afraid about certifications and, you know, and that might be their major concern?
See, I don't understand that. I mean, I would understand that if I just emailed them and said, hey, I'd like to teach yoga. But I
right.
made sure to very clearly state in every email I sent them, I am certified. I am newly certified. I just heard the other day that I had gotten, actually yesterday, I had gotten my certification. I've been planning this for a while. I've been waiting for almost 4 weeks to hear of my certification. So I've been planning. I've been gathering people that I would contact. I've been networking. I have my page on Facebook for my yoga. I have my website set up. I have my Google Plus, which I added you to my yoga circle today. I have my Google Plus set up with my yoga circle. So anyone who wants to take yoga from me on Google Plus, they're already in my circle. And of course, anyone who wants to be on Google Plus, if you just go to my website, Shanti, that's Shaanthi, yogawithandy.blogspot.com, you'll see the little symbol for take lessons online. And if you click the little Google thingy, it'll take you right to my page on Google Plus. And if you have any trouble, just contact me. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are we paying you through PayPal? Is that how we're paying you?
Yes. Now, the first lesson is free. The first lesson that I'm giving next Saturday night at 8 p.m. is free. And that's so I can show people, look, come take the class. And it's like I keep telling people, where are you going to get a free class? Okay, you go into a yoga studio, that's great, and you can take a free class, but I have seen yoga monthly classes vary anywhere from $10 to $115 a month. I wish I had $115 a month to blow. I wish I did. But my classes are $5 per person once the free class is over. The class next Saturday is free. All you have to do is come join my Google Plus circle. I'll send you out instructions on how to get remoted in. It's Google Hangouts. It's just like you see on TV, the one big person and then all the little people underneath. That's how it is, and that's how I'm going to be giving the class. And then if you want to take classes in the future, then I'm going to have class scheduled set up. And I just, because I really thought about that. I thought, okay, these people must wonder about my certification. I can show them my certification.
Uh-huh.
So it's like all they had to, if they were really concerned, all they had to do was ask. But it didn't even get that far.
That's
and then
why
I had one person rush me today.
Or jealous and don't want the competition. That's what I'm thinking. It's very odd.
That's a friend of mine who's the business guru. That is what she said. She said the same thing. She said they're jealous. She had come up with a style of yoga that anybody, overweight, inflexible, physically limited, limited mobility, you have invented something that everyone can do. And if they can't, you are willing to alter what you can do just for them so they will be able to do it. She said, so yes, people are jealous of you because they didn't think of that first because they can't think outside the box. And I said, seriously, do you honestly think that's what it could be? I mean, what about all this peace and love and light and blessings and all this stuff that I keep seeing on the yoga website? What is that, just lip service? And she's like, do you really need me to answer that for you? And I said, yeah, but what a rotten way to be. You claim you're into love and light and peace and help people, and every day is a glorious day. I'm going to be lecturing me today. Oh, there's no such thing as beginner or advanced. Each day is a new beginning. And I was like, well, yeah, you're right. It is. But then when it got down to the, well, I'd like to see your yoga online, well, I'm sorry, you're not going to see it online. You'll see it online when you attend a class. I didn't say this to the person, but I just thought you'll see it online when you attend a class. Oh, better yet, how about you let me come in on my dime and teach a class? Free. To you, to anybody else who wants to come. And if you don't like it, you don't hire me to teach. Done. End of discussion. Problem solved. You know, what honestly could these people have to lose? Absolutely nothing. Yet that's not good enough either. They don't have anything to lose, yet that's not even good enough.
Well, I think teaching it on the Google Plus or on the Google Hangout network, I mean, I love Google Hangout. I've tried it a couple times. I think it's a great forum for just about anything, meetings or whatever. But I think this will be a way to keep it personalized to you. And if you're not meant to be in the studios, then obviously that's not what you're supposed to be doing right now. So it's a situation where perhaps you don't want to push the river with that right now. Plus, it is Mercury retrograde, too. So, you know, there's things that are misunderstood, and perhaps maybe you're communicating it, but they're not getting it for whatever reason. But that could be.
I forgot about Mercury retrograde. That very well could be. And it's like my husband said. My husband has been the first one to tell me. He says, you're unconventional. You know you're unconventional. You're probably going to end up going it on your own, just like you have with everything else you do. And I looked at him and I said, we were chatting on my little phone thingy earlier, and I said, you know what? I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and I think that for right now, you're obviously meant to do it through Google and perhaps through the Google Hangout and conducting the classes there. You'll acquire your following from that. And then you can move on to other things. But I would say if you get something started now in a yoga studio with the Mercury retrograde right now, it probably wouldn't last anyway for whatever reason.
That very well could be.
Permanent. I guarantee you that's the way Mercury retrograde works with me anyway. If I start something and I start it from a great idea that I have under a Mercury retrograde, you better believe that at the end of that 3-week period of Mercury retrograde, that idea is already gone. It hasn't worked. It didn't work, and it's not going to work, or I've lost interest, or I just couldn't make it work for whatever reason. So Mercury retrograde, it's a real bitch. But
it really is. It really is. And maybe these people will come around at some point, but I'm not going to hold my breath. And my husband says, yeah, maybe one day if you can put enough aside from your books that are still on the market and your classes that you're going to be given on Google, he said, maybe you can get you a little shop and get your business license and actually open up a business. And I said, well, I'll look into that at some point in the future.
Yeah, but for right now, I would start it small. And you already put all these plans into action before the Mercury went retrograde anyway. So this is all okay what you're doing right now. But,
yeah.
But I would say, you know, just continue on with the original plan and then see where you're at in a couple of months, you know, and then go on from there. But I think
I think
your husband's right because I know you're an Aries, and, you know, Aries people don't work. I'm just noticing this as I've gotten older. Aries people don't work particularly good with other people.
No, we don't. We're too headstrong, stubborn, and we refuse to look at something and say, oh, well, this is how you do it. Well, what about this? What do you mean that won't work? Yes, it will. story of my life and my working career.
That's the way I've always been, too, very independent, and I'm always looking for an easier way to do something.
Well, my life philosophy is, why does it matter how you get there as long as you get there?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I always want to look for not necessarily the easiest, but maybe even more efficient.
Oh, that's my favorite word. I do that all the time. Everything has to be efficient with me. I don't like things that are complicated. I don't like things that are time-consuming. And I'm a problem solver.
Right, right. But I don't like people telling me what to do.
Oh, me either. Me either. And my husband said that too. He's like, they would probably tell you in the yoga studio what to do. And he said, and you know that is not going to work out well. I said, no,
yeah,
you're
right. I don't even like Leon telling me what to do. When he tells me what to do, I just look at him and tell him, look, you're not my father, and you can't tell me what to do. He gets very mad when I say that.
Well, my husband is also an Aries and 15 years older than me. So imagine what it's like living in this household.
Yeah, Leon's an Aries, too. April 5th, and he's April 7th. But
my husband is April 7th, and I'm April 17th. And people look at me and they say, you're April 17th? Oh, God, you're an Aries on the Taurus cusp. That explains so much.
Yeah. The with Leon, you know, he's a lot more, how can I say, he's headstrong, but I think he takes time to think things out more than I do. I'm very headstrong, and I want things done right away. And if I have to communicate something, it has to be done right now because I have a very unusual placement in my third house. I have my Sun and Mercury both in Mars and conjunct. So a lot of people that know me think I'm a Gemini. But that's what makes me communicate all the time and, you know, be involved in media and stuff like that because that's what I do. But it has to be done immediately. I can't wait, you know.
That's how I am. I am a textbook type A personality.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm also a perfectionist. I've learned to loosen up a little bit as I've gotten older, but the one thing I will never do is conform because I simply do not understand how people can just do something just because someone tells them that's how it should be done.
Right.
Who said that's how it has to be done? See, I was the same way with my writing. Who says you have to do it this way?
Yeah.
Why can't I do it this way? Exactly. Who made the rules and who gave them the right to make the rules?
To me, the rules are meant to be broken. That's just...
Well, to me, there doesn't need to be any rules. They need to be more like just guidelines. to follow them if they work for you. And if they don't put down somebody else because they choose not to follow the rules. As long as they're not hurting anyone, leave them alone. That was always my big argument in the publishing world. I used to say this to my detractors online. Why do you care about what I'm doing? Am I competition to you? Tough. Get over it.
Yeah. But it's funny with Aries people. I love to watch the classic Aries on television, too, like David Letterman is a classic Aries. And I think he's April 12th. And I like to watch Conan because he's an Aries, too. He's crazy.
Oh, is he really? That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So it's interesting to... It's interesting to see how they, you know, interact with their guests. You know, I think it's
pretty
funny.
That is funny watching them. And my yoga is the same way. I am certified to teach yoga. As long as you get healthy, you stay healthy or you get to where you want to be or you can do something that you couldn't do before, and as long as it helps you, then who cares how you get there?
Right, right. Now, on the healing aspect of this, I want to kind of get a feel for how you expect or what are your expectations of helping others heal, and how do you want to internalize this healing energy for yourself in regards to teaching the yoga, what I mean?
I get a great sense of satisfaction in helping others. So I had someone tell me that wants to take my yoga class, the same example I used earlier. I don't have a trophy body, and I don't want people to judge me. And I said, in my class, no one will judge you. I said, and if someone does come and they're arrogant and they're snotty and judgmental, then they need to not come back. I said, no one will judge anyone in my class. The way I plan to start off each class is to tell people, this is your yoga.
Mm-hmm.
You're not being judged. This isn't a competition. I want to raise people's self-esteem. The first thing I hear people say is, well, I'm overweight and I feel self-conscious. Not in my class, you won't. Who cares if you're overweight? You came. I can tailor the activities for you so it doesn't hurt you. And as long as you get some benefit and your doctor has okayed you for physical activity and you understand that you can't push yourself, then hopefully you'll get benefit out of it. I love helping people. My satisfaction will come in knowing that I took someone who had no self-esteem or who had very low self-esteem and hated themselves or didn't like getting up or just generally every day didn't really have much to be happy about.
Right.
And then they come take my yoga class, and it's like, wow, I feel better. I'm calmer. I'm relaxed. The meditation was helpful. That helps me heal, knowing that I've taken someone, because I was severely depressed when I realized that the days of my youthful glory were gone. And when I was diagnosed with my severe degenerative bone disease in my right knee at 35 years old, I came home from having an MRI done when I got the results. I came home and cried. And my husband said, dear, you're getting older. I said, no, you don't understand. I've been an athletic phenom my entire life. I was training for the Olympics. At 10 years old, I was training to go to the Olympics. I wanted to go so badly, I didn't even want a gold medal. I wanted a bronze medal because I thought it was prettier. I said, you don't understand. I'm not supposed to get old. I'm not supposed to get broken down. And for many years... Because that was when I won my last tournament and I had a knee brace, on my right knee, and I shook so hard when I got off the floor because of the severe nerve damage I have in my arms and the circulatory problems in my legs. My legs were aching so bad I could hardly walk, and they were swollen very badly. I came home with my trophy, and I cried because I knew that the next time I walked into the Kung Fu studio, it was to tell my Sifu that I wouldn't be coming back.
Right. Wow.
And I fell into a severe depression. And I can't be the only one out there like that. I got overweight. I ballooned up, which, of course, affected my health. And then one day I just said, you know what? Done. I'm going to start eating healthy. And I am going to do some type of yoga that I can do. So I can't bend like a pretzel anymore. Who cares? And all those funky things that you see people doing, the little thing that looks like a question mark and all that, please. I could have done that any day of the week. I could have gotten up first thing in the morning, hopped out of bed, and done that in the morning. So I went from being like that to being decrepit. So I said, I'm not going to be decrepit anymore. With age, I finally started to realize that I have limitations. Now, what if there's somebody else?
Yeah, we work through our limitations. We get older.
We do.
And you know, like I know I can do a lot of the things I used to do, but I'll tell you, I told Leon just the other day, I told him, I said, do not ever let me get in a wheelchair. I will walk no matter what. I
Absolutely.
Said, and if I can't, I'll crawl on my hands and knees, but I am not going to, once you get in a wheelchair, it's all over. So
exactly.
You have to do whatever you can. I mean, I've worked enough with the older hospice patients to know that once you sit down in that chair and you've immobilized yourself, basically.
Absolutely. And that's why when I had my epiphany, I thought, I can't be the only person on the planet like this. And what if someone else out there who's like me but doesn't have the self-esteem and the self-confidence that I do, what if they're out there and they could benefit from this?
Yeah, they could actually get in a positive frame of mind and change
Absolutely.
Their whole mind, you know.
Absolutely, and that's part of also me being a doctor of motivation. The motivational speeches and workshops that I give, and I've been giving workshops for at least a decade, and part of the workshops that I give, too, is thinking for yourself, self-confidence, and how to deal with your detractors, how to deal with people that will tear you down. And that's all from firsthand experience that I've had through my life. So part of my motivational degree comes into my yoga. Don't ever let anybody tell you that you're not doing the right kind of yoga. Don't ever let anybody tell you that you're not going to get any benefit from it.
Right.
Don't ever let anybody tell you that it's not going to work because you're not doing what everyone else is doing and you're doing it incorrectly. Don't ever let anybody tell you that. That will be my message at each of the classes, too. And if someone decides to be negative, then tell them to take a hike because you don't need somebody like that in your life. Because if they're that unhappy with themselves, unless they wish to come to you for help and maybe talk things through and say, well, why don't you tell me what you're doing? And maybe change the tone of it and say, okay, well, I don't agree with you, but more power to you. You know, even if they disagree with you, they can be positive about it or they can move along.
Right, right. Well, we're going into the last 3 minutes of the show. So do you have any parting words on, you know, for our listeners on healing, and give us a little rundown on the date and time of the first class so people can get in on that.
The parting advice that I'll give people, the same thing that I say in my seminars that I give, think for yourself and make no apologies. You don't owe anyone anything. You don't have to follow the crowd. And the people that want you to conform, it's because they're jealous and they're threatened because you have the courage to do what they don't. It's a lot easier to conform and follow the crowd than it is to stand out there in that stormy blast all by yourself. Believe me, I speak from experience because I've been out on that branch all by myself many times while the wind whipped me around and I didn't have a friend in the world. You'll survive, and it will make you stronger, and it'll also give you wisdom.
Because when is the yoga class?
Some people are. The yoga class is next Saturday at 8 p.m., and you'll need to come to my website, which is Shanti, Shaanthi, Yoga with Andy, A-N-D-Y, .blogspot.com, and you'll see the Google circle to be added to, and you can also find me on Facebook, Shanti Yoga with Andy.
And I just wanted to thank our sponsors. We're going down into the last minute. We want to thank Here Be Monsters, which is the network that we're on right now, Roundtree 7, Daughters of Isis, Hoodoo Blog, Power New Media and Public Relations, Tarot and Stars, and Florida Nature Photos. We will be back next Friday with another exciting show. I want to thank you, Andy, for Andrea, for being on the show with us. Andy, Andrea, same.
You can call me Andy.
For Kelly out there, I want to thank you, too, for being on the show with us. Very enlightening conversations, both of these. And next Friday, we don't have a guest yet, but we will, and I'll put the information out as soon as I have it. And hit us up on the blog if you can contribute in any way. That's wisewomenmedia.posterous.com. That's P-O-S-T-E-R-O-U-S.com. And any amount will do to help us keep the show on the air. So until next Friday, thank you very much, and you all have a great evening. And
thank you, everyone.
Andy.
Thank you, Anita. Good night.